other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
And now, broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, you're listening to Sam and Steph in the Morning. If you'd like to take part in the show today, please dial 323-203-0815. And now, here are your program hosts, Sam and Steph, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday. It's December 7th, which, in my mind, it's Pearl Harbor Day, believe it or not. You see, I know my shit, man.
You do know your shit. You know all kinds of good shit. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steph. How are you?
Hungover.
Hungover? Oh, wow.
Not really, actually.
And you don't drink that much, right?
Or no, do
you?
Well, recently I have.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's horrible. No, actually, you know, I'm not. I did drink a lot last night, and I was fairly, you know, drunk, but I don't actually get hungover.
Yeah?
As far as, like, I just was texting my friend, and he's like, oh, my God, you know, preparing to go to Pilates right now, and he's, like, tipping over. I don't have stomach aches. My head's fine. It actually does nothing but good for me.
Oh, well, then you should do it all the time.
I know. It's horrible. That's dangerous. That's how you become an alcoholic. Oh,
so what were you drinking?
Good question. Started out with a Bloody Mary. Then went into just a, this is horrible. Just a shot that a friend got. I don't know what. I don't know shots at all. And then I had two gin and tonics. Is that what they're called? And that got me drunk.
Yeah, well, it should, you know. Yeah. Four drinks.
That's not that bad, is it? We were bowling. We went
bowling and you were getting drunk
at the
same time.
Yeah, well, it was a celebration.
I'm sure you did very well, right? What was your score?
Oh, my God. I was horrible. But I was horrible before I drank.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it had nothing to do with the drinking.
No, it didn't. I got a little better as I drank, actually. But no.
Well, you thought you were getting better.
I was so embarrassed. I had scores at the end that were just devastating. I was talking all kinds of shit beforehand, too, because I'm like, oh, man. When it comes to Wii, playing bowling on the Wii system, I kick ass. I'll get 10 strikes in a row.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, bowling is not the same. It's just not the same as the Wii.
Oh, well.
I was horrible.
Bowling. I haven't bowled in so long, you know, but it is fun.
Oh, it's so much fun when you're doing a decent job.
Yeah.
No, it's fun too. I had fun. It's just you always worry people are judging you because you're so bad, you know?
That's true.
I was that bad. So every single time he went in the gutter, I'm just like looking at everyone's facial expressions like, just don't judge me. Let's just have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
No one cares.
Just have fun. Who cares?
Yeah. It was a good time. It was a good time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we have a special guest in the studio. I don't want to keep him sitting here and waiting. We have Reese Golchin in the studio. Welcome back, Reese.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Steph. It's good to be back.
Yeah, Reese is a friend of the show, definitely a good friend of the show.
I'm a GF, OTS, friend of the show. Good friend of the show.
Ooh,
good
I
friend
like
of
that.
The show. Okay, yeah. There you go.
And yet, you know, Steph, the tangible realities of bowling can really be a bitch.
Yeah, they can.
The difference between Wii bowling and real bowling. But here's the thing, you know, bowling, drinking, it should be a co-requisite for bowling.
Yeah.
First of all, go ahead and drink up, because a good driver is a relaxed driver. That's what I always say.
There you go.
Yeah, until you get a DUI.
Right, but drinking and bowling have to go together, because, I mean, you drink a beer, you roll the ball, maybe you smoke a cigarette, you sit down.
Yeah.
You drink the beer, you roll the ball, you smoke a cigarette, you sit down. I mean, what else is going on? At some point, it's like, look, I got the shoes on, I'm smoking a go. You take my turn. Just go.
Yeah, just go.
You go ahead. That's
pretty much how it was towards the end. The last two or three games, we were just bowling for each other. You know, no one cared.
Yeah.
It started
exactly,
out competitive, and then it ended up
The booze makes that sport happen a lot better.
It's funny how alcohol works, you know?
Alcohol plus bowling equals good time.
Yeah, it was fun.
Can make you mellow, but some people actually get like really aggressive when they drink, huh?
When they drink, sure. Gosh. But here's the thing. You want to keep an eye on your aggressive friends when you introduce them to drinking and bowling. Because that's like that's a 9-12 pound ball in their hands.
Yeah.
And you don't want somebody bringing up something that, you know, they haven't quite worked their out their issue with.
Yeah.
Hey, remember that fucking time I lent you my fucking my lawnmower? You know? You didn't fucking give me that back. And then you realize he's got a 9 pound ball in his hand.
Yeah. So you behave.
Yeah.
It's dangerous, yeah. I didn't notice any violence, nothing like that, but I can't believe how flirtatious people get.
Yeah.
You know, alcohol really makes you horny. I don't know.
Well, this is shocking to you?
It takes away your inhibitions,
too. Well, it's just, you know, some people, there are a few people that are more, like, conservative. Like, you know, I mean, I'm more friendly, obviously, but not slutty.
Right.
I'm not saying anyone was slutty last night, but I mean,
you don't get Showtime horny, you get CW horny.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's sort of TV specific,
right.
not cable.
Not cable.
Yeah. No. It's always the conservative ones you got to watch out for.
Really?
When you mix booze with them, because yeah, if they're not talking about screwing, you know, and having a good time and how they like to be touched. When they're sober, be careful, because booze will unlock that Pandora's box.
Oh, no.
And you're going to find out the things they like and how they like touching you.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, drink up with your conservative friends. They'll tell you everything you ever wanted to know about them.
Well, I think she found out already last night.
Yeah, it's true.
Nice. Yeah. Well, yeah, people get flirtatious. You know, I mean, your inhibitions are down and, you know, you figure, what the hell? And, yeah, I mean, people, when they drink, they think differently. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't drink that much, and I rarely get drunk, you know. I mean, I like other things, but not alcohol.
Do you guys ever notice how sometimes you have so many friends that have birthdays in September? Like, September rolls around, and suddenly it's like it's everybody's birthday. You want to know why? Because New Year's Eve, their folks have gotten liquored up, and they got laid.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So that happened on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. People get drunk and lucky on New Year's Eve. 9 months later, hey, Shazam, the kids are here.
Yeah. I never noticed that many birthdays in September.
Booze
it
plus New Year's Eve.
It took me a second to get what you were saying. I got it, though.
Booze plus New Year's Eve equals family.
That's funny. That's why all the September birthdays. That's hysterical.
Check your Facebook page. You'll see it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. September birthdays.
I never noticed that.
September
I don't know
is lousy
that many
with
Septembers.
Birthdays.
Yeah.
Check it now, but the internet's not working on mine.
It's not, huh? Well, it is working for the rest of the world, so I don't know what to say to you.
You have to rely on your wits, Steph.
That makes me so sad.
That's okay. I'm here for you. I got your back.
No, it's not even that. It's just I'm major ADD. I have to be doing 10 things at once.
Yeah.
So I'm like texting. I'm on the computer.
That's okay. Just focus on the conversation.
What do you... What do you drive? Because I want to make sure when you're on the road that I'm not behind you with your ADD. And
my red Nissan Versa.
Keeping an eye out for the red Nissan Versa.
Yeah. It's got so many scrapes and bumps on it, you'll know which one it is.
Why? Is that because of the way you drive?
I'm very clumsy. But no, I've had a lot of people bump into me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure.
I know. Everybody's crazy except
problem.
You.
It's a consistent problem, yeah.
It's the rest of the world. It's not me. I've heard that before somewhere.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm the one that their insurance covered my stuff. So I have proof.
Yeah.
I have proof. Wasn't no 50-50 here.
Okay.
Ooh, I felt like I had a smoker's voice for a second there.
Oh,
like,
well.
Raspy.
Okay, well, maybe it's the alcohol.
You had a Brenda Vaccaro thing going on? Did I just make a reference that you got, I hope?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah.
Great actress. She had a smoke. She was Demi Moore before Demi Moore came out.
Oh, okay.
Very smoky, gravelly voice.
Yeah.
You remember.
That's way back. That's
old school.
Yeah.
But I watch a lot of old, Turner classics.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You're definitely not as old as I am.
No,
but
no.
You're on top of your stuff. So
I watch the old school stuff.
Yeah.
If you want to know why we have Demi Moore, Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah, I guess.
Do you guys realize we're living in a post-Demi Ashton world?
It is a different world, isn't it?
It doesn't feel different.
Are you serious?
It feels different.
You're kidding
now,
me
do you believe
right
the stories that she's actually bi, and what happened is that they had sort of like a relationship where she would agree to bring another woman to the bedroom as long as she's there, you know, like a threesome.
Okay.
But apparently now he had sex with only one girl without her knowing. So that's what pissed her off. Do you believe that?
Whether you believe it or not, why is this shocking?
It's interesting to me. I mean, I would love to have that.
If you now I know what someone's getting for Hanukkah.
Yeah, there you go.
But
girl.
Ladies, if you're doing the thing where you're inviting another girl into the bed, don't be surprised if when you go to the bathroom, your guy is still going to town, okay?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That shit gonna happen. It's gonna go down. Don't.
That's why I give up on dating. Period. Because the second you do start to like, we're all sluts.
Essentially, we are.
We are. We're all sluts.
Don't give up on dating. You can't give up on dating. You just have to establish the parameters that work for you. Demi Moore cannot be shocked that this happened. And if she is. Well, come on, sister. Now you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know why, though. I mean, because the thing is this. Look, if your wife is willing to have you bring a woman into the bedroom, why do you have to go out and cheat? I mean, you already get it right here.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, if they're delivering the fried chicken, why run out and eat a burger? Yeah.
Because it's never enough.
Exactly.
Don't you get it? It's never enough.
You're right.
And actors are also like a total different species, you know?
Yeah.
Entertainers in general, I just feel like they're constantly trying to explore anyway. So once they are satisfied with that, you know, they have the threesomes. You know, what can we try now? Well, I'm married. Let's try sleeping with a random chick.
Like David Bowie and Mick Jagger were talking about, they had so many different combinations of, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, David Bowie was, like, fucking a humidifier or something. Because it's like, he's already been with every possible variation of human life form.
That's true,
And the rock stars have it worse than anybody.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know about, you know, the thing is with Ashton, I mean, I'm sure all the women throw themselves at him. It's very hard to stand to resist the temptation.
I got to think when you're a tall, good-looking movie star / TV actor.
Yeah, and you get all these hot chicks and stuff, you know, you forget you're married.
There's got to be a hashtag called great problems to have that we can file this under.
Yeah.
Oh, that poor Ashton. You know, he's got so much pussy lined up.
Yeah.
Hashtag great problems to have.
Yeah, you're really into Twitter, aren't you?
You know, I've embraced it. I really have. And I was just explaining to my buddy David last night, because he's new to Twitter. He's like, why are you on? I'll tell you why I'm there. Seriously, I mean, I don't have very many followers, but Twitter's a great source for breaking news. It really is. I get more breaking news from all the media feeds that I follow.
Right.
So before anything goes on you know, Reuters, AP, ABC News, before it goes on their website, they're putting it out on their Twitter feed.
Really?
So first and foremost, for a practical reason, I like having the news stuff. And then, you know, you goof around. I've got some fun tweeps in my world. I have this one Twitter follower. We follow each other. She's great. She's a concierge at a hotel in New York City. And I just went to New York and I hit her up saying, look, I got to add some new restaurants to my rotation because I'm very habitual. I'll go to the same places over and over again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She came back at me and gave me some great recommendations for when I was just in New York. And right there, Twitter paid for itself.
Awesome.
I guess it did. Yeah. Did you get to meet her in person?
No, I didn't. You know, and that's the thing that I would... I want to kind of figure out, because I said to her, I'm like, my God, thank you so much. And let me know, you know, if it's cool to swing by whatever hotel you're at. I would love to say, I actually kind of want to.
That sounds creepy.
I wanted to bring her. Listen, when a concierge, you know, hooks you up, you tip them, you give them a gift. I was going to bring her like a muffin basket to say, hey, thanks, because she didn't have to do that. But, you know, I didn't get anything back. And that's when I thought, I'm like, so I guess there's a line in Twitter. You're one of my tweeps, but I don't need to see you.
Yeah, there's a line online. I mean, for sure, you know, because the thing is, you don't know who you're really dealing with.
No, you really don't. You don't even know if that picture is them. You know that some of those Twitter avatars, that's not what they look like.
Yeah. And women scammers will always tell you the things you want to hear, you know, so you got to be very careful. Because, you know, you might meet somebody and they will expose the things that you want and that you need, and they'll hit you with it.
Of any tweet that starts with, hey, handsome, where's your wallet?
Yeah. But like on Facebook, you know. I mean,
I need to stop doing that then.
Yeah. I mean, I get these women from South America and Asia and constantly like hitting me up on Facebook. And, you know, I think these are all scams, you know.
Of course they are.
I mean, you know, what the hell,
This is the equivalent of the Nigerian prince saying, hey, listen, man, if you just hook a brother up.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have a friend that is, you know, has at several times looked for roommates on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And he has, at like every different interval, gotten an email from someone from England. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm moving over from London. I'm bringing all my stuff. I have to ship my stuff. If you can give me the... It starts with, give me the address. And then it eventually goes to, if you just pay to receive all my stuff, then I'll be there to get it. And like, at one point he asked me, he's like, well, do you think it's a scam? I said, what are they saying they're going to send?
Yeah.
Well, he says he's going to send all his furniture in his car. I'm like, okay. Do you know anyone that's moving here from London that really needs to ship their car?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I think those are pretty obvious, but I actually had a friend, her and her fiance went to New York for a trip, but they paid up front for their hotel. and it wasn't really a hotel. It was like an apartment. And
really?
And when they got there, this apartment didn't even exist.
Wow.
Didn't even exist. So they had like $2,000 down the pot.
How do you spend something like that? I mean, how do you fall for something
they
like
obviously,
this?
They didn't do their research. They're like, but thank goodness we were able to get our money back. You know, you filed whatever to the bank, you know, say it was fraud. And then they had a friend that they ended up staying with anyhow. But can you imagine? What a great way to start your vacation. You know,
well,
where is the hotel?
Good tip. Unless it says Marriott on the front, don't give them your money up front.
Yeah. Or Expedia or something.
Yeah, go to Orbitz, people. Go to Expedia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just came back from New York.
Yeah.
Right?
I had a good long stay there, man. Two weeks in the city that never sleeps.
2 weeks is nice.
So jealous.
Especially during the holidays when it's all festive and everything.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Man. It was great. Thanksgiving was awesome. I got to spend a lot of time, in and around the city in Manhattan and Queens and seeing friends and eating.
I'm so envious.
Yeah.
Did you join the Occupy forces there? Or,
I got to tell you, I spoke at Occupy Wall Street.
Really?
I went down to Zuccotti Park.
Uh-huh.
A very good friend of mine is one of the organizers here at Occupy LA.
My
very dear friend Magda, who's laboring every day to foster the message, especially down there. And when she found out I was going to New York, she said, would you take a message from us to them? I said, yeah, sure. So she wrote something and she gave it to me and she goes, okay, I want you to present this. And I had to ask her, I said, so when you ask me if you want me to present this, do you want me to just hand this to someone or do you want me to sort of read this? And she said, no, I want you to read it.
Mm.
So I went down to Zuccotti and this was a couple of days after Bloomberg had the cops go in and roust everybody.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So the park didn't have any, people camped out.
Right.
And it was rather early the morning that I was there. It was a little after 9 o'clock. But there was a good like 150 people there. So I got up, I engaged the people's mic, and I delivered my friend's message, tacked on a few words of my own. And it was a thrill.
Did they leave a mess behind them in the park like they did here? Because I mean here there was like excrement and everything that the cops were finding. And they had to bring cleaning crews, because nobody would take down their tents.
I got to tell you, man, democracy is dirty.
Yeah.
Democracy gets. Women. Listen, you sit there and go, I got to tell you, the women's suffrage movement, Sam, they made a mess. This is the price we pay.
But you know what? They had a cause. I mean, with the Occupy, I don't see the cause. Sorry.
Tell me what you think the chasm is between.
It's gonna get dirty.
Tell me what you think the chasm is between has happened historically and what's happening now.
I think the Occupy forces are people that don't have jobs.
Yeah.
And maybe are not looking for a job because let me tell you this: if I had 2 months to spend doing this shit, I'd probably be very broke.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I don't know what their agenda is. What are they hoping to achieve? Maybe you can tell me.
It would be my pleasure to tell you. But before I say anything else, Sam, go down there. You have an amazing media arm at your disposal. Go down there and talk to someone who might have spent 2 months down there because they can't find a job.
Mm-hmm.
They're, I don't have to explain 8.5% unemployment.
But is it the fault of the 1% that they can't find a job?
But hang on. Malcolm Gladwell says.
I'm feeling the heat in here.
Well, Malcolm Gladwell has said in a lot of his writing, things go wrong for a lot of reasons. It's never one thing. It's always a series of things that happen that make something go wrong or right. So the state that we're in right now with the levels of unemployment, a lot of things had to happen to get us there. But is it the fault of the 1%? The 1% it represents the inequity in this country that has existed for a long time that continues to foster a system where it gets harder and harder for people to find jobs that they're trained at. And that's at the core of what a lot of this message is about. There are many things that are being said.
Right.
There's a lot wrong. So the message is varied.
Right. But you're talking about inequality. I mean, the thing is that we're equal under the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's enough for democracy. The thing is, you can't have equality when it comes to money because otherwise we'd have socialism here. So this is capitalism. Everybody, on their own, trying to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
When I suffer financially, when I'm not doing very well, I don't look for other people to provide for me or to blame this on,
Right.
And I think that, at least from what I'm seeing, there's a sense of entitlement there.
Right. But it's really not. Sam,
okay.
if if you had a lobby that could go to Washington and arrange it so that your specific needs and causes in your business were seen to before everybody else's, well, that's great. That happens all the time.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with going to your representative in Congress and saying, hey, I'd like to highlight this need. But when they go to Washington and say, I'd like to highlight this need for my particular industry, and hey, do you need a contribution for your next election? Then the level of expectation gets taken to a different level, and there's a body of people in this country that don't have that access. They don't have a lobby, so they have to stand up and take to the streets. Listen, America's a great country for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is we've always been good at self-correcting. Okay, this is what we do. Women didn't have the right to vote. They took to the streets and changed that. There was a dearth of people that thought ending slavery was a good idea. That's why there was a war over it.
Right.
So when we have to address things from a standpoint of self-correction as a country, people take to the streets to do it. The conversation is worthy of having, Sam. It really is. Because
okay, let's have the conversation, but I don't see a conversation here. That's what I'm saying. I mean, what are they hoping is going to happen?
It's already happening.
What is that?
That the issue has come to the forefront.
Well, okay. Now at the attention of... everyone's staring at me.
No.
Brain fart. Never mind. Continue.
No. Listen, it has cast a light on what has been, in a lot of ways, a very dirty secret in this country for, 30 plus years, that the chasm between the haves and the have-nots grows wider and wider. And anything, I don't care if you're a country or a table, without a firm base in the middle, you're going to topple right over.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that goes up when nothing's coming down will make us top heavy and it will fall right over.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a large, that's a gross generalization. I think the middle class really is the majority.
Of course it is. And the middle class is suffering.
Well, I don't know about that. I think
take it from me. The middle class
Of the middle class.
The middle class is suffering all over.
Well, okay, but the thing is, we don't have jobs. That's true,
It's access to education.
Mm-hmm.
All right, these kids at UC Davis, they got sprayed by the authorities there. First of all, that's criminal.
Right.
All right.
That goes without saying.
They treated those kids like animals. But let's talk about why they were sitting down in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's getting costlier and costlier for kids to get a college education in this state.
Right.
It gets harder and harder all the time.
Right.
Okay. So if these kids can't get an education, what's going to happen to them? Because they don't exist in a vacuum. We get kids coming out of high school and they can't afford to go to college. Well, where are they going to go? They're going to hit the street. Then they become part of a job market that's already flooded, that lacks jobs for people that are already looking. And then where are we? Unless we give access, real access to education. I mean, Tom Hayden talked about getting an education in California top to bottom for $5,000. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Somebody might say, well, that's socialism. Really? If I can put a kid through college, by paying my taxes in this state for $5,000 and he comes out with his degree and a real shot at a job, that's good for everybody.
Yeah, but who's going to finance all that?
Who's going to finance that? That's a big question that we all need to answer together.
Yeah, so you're talking about costs going up, but they go up everywhere. I mean, the thing is, do you believe what doctors charge? Do you believe what lawyers and accountants charge? I mean, it's like out there in the stratosphere. So, of course, in higher education, you're going to get that too.
But reasonably, Sam.
We got to remember also that the upper class, they're the ones that spend a lot of money, and it's the spending that oils the machine, the economy.
That's part of it.
The thing is, if we don't spend, we destroy money, and then there's no movement in the economy.
Right, from a strictly Keynesian, point of view.
All right,
yes.
That's my point of view.
Right, okay, but conservative Republicans in the House and Senate keep, using... God bless Frank Luntz. He gets a job for coming up with expressions like job creators. Okay, well, they're not really creating a lot of jobs, and there's also not a lot of capital moving because people with money are sitting on their money because there's not a lot of good out there to tell
them.
That's
not necessarily so. I was reading an article yesterday of how much they're spending despite the Occupy movement.
I read that article too.
Okay.
Yeah, that's clever. And writers need to write stuff, but an article.
Well, if you're not gonna trust anything you write.
I'm not trusting. It's not about not trusting what I read. I'm trusting what statistics have revealed over the last 4 or 5 years, and that capital has shrunk. Money's just sitting somewhere waiting. Mm. I mean, that article, I read it too, and it's like, yeah, sure, okay, so there's some super wealthy people that will rent an island for a little while.
Right.
That's not everybody spending money. That's not people taking their capital and going out and starting businesses, because I wouldn't start a business right now.
Right.
Because who knows what the markets are going to be like, who it's going to know what it's like if you spend your capital to hire people and create infrastructure for your business if there's no place for your business to go.
Right.
It's smart golf to just wait and see how it's all going to play out. But this is all a conversation we need to have together. And when forces on the right say to the Occupy movement and those that support it, oh, just shut up. Just take a bath and get a job.
Mm.
It's so dismissive and cruel.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, they're Americans.
Yeah.
They deserve to be listened to. That's what that's what sets us apart from Syria.
Yeah, but we are listening to them. You know, I mean, we are listening, but
the conversation is happening.
But what's the ultimate goal? What do we need to see happen to know that they've succeeded?
Well, it's not going to happen anytime soon. This movement has just started, and it's going to take years for it to unfold in a way that will yield the results that this country really needs.
Mm-hmm.
The civil rights movement, that didn't happen over a weekend, for crying out loud.
Right.
Started in the late 50s, and it really didn't yield the results.
Yeah, but I think they had a clear goal. You know, what is the goal here? You haven't told me that yet. What? How will we know that they've succeeded?
How will we know when we've succeeded, Sam?
Okay, we.
All of
the
us.
Occupy.
You too, man.
Okay.
This is not just about them.
Well,
this
look,
is about you. You're an American too, man.
Look, I'm struggling financially too. I'm not looking for anybody to blame it on.
No, it's not about blame. It's about having a conversation. And first and foremost...
No, but what do they expect?
But I am curious, What
I mean,
is
do they
the
want him to
goal?
Give them money here? I mean,
it's not about giving money.
Should the rich give money to the poor? What is it?
Well, you talk about a generalization. Okay.
Right.
Oh, how about tax reform?
Mm-hmm.
How about sweeping tax reform that closes loopholes so that GE doesn't get away with paying less than 3% of their taxes?
Right.
Okay. How about getting money out of politics? How about publicly financed federal elections?
Mm-hmm.
So someone can't go to Washington and tell a representative or a senator, hey, I'll throw some money at you for your campaign if you'll, you know, wink, wink, take care of my issue.
Right.
Yeah. I think public financing of federal elections and even state elections and tax reform are two of many issues.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the, I believe, good ones to start with, because those will foster and continue to put this whole issue, to foster the issue and get it down the road so that real results can happen for everyone, not just these people that get, you know, scorned and mocked for needing a job and needing a shower.
Yeah. Well, you're right in that I should probably go there and talk to some of the people.
You absolutely should. I think you'll
learn
a lot.
Yeah, because I don't know that everybody is going to give me the same answer, and that's what's interesting, you know.
Yeah.
To see what various people think about it.
You're going to get a lot of different answers, but you should go, because I think you'll find out stuff that that will surprise you. Really, I was surprised, man.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something, man. I go down to Zuccotti Park, and the first guy that came up and talked to me, listen, people, what you see on TV isn't all so, you know, off the mark. This guy was talking about the voices in his head. And that, I was like, I looked at him and I said it just to myself. I'm like, how many of you are there?
Yeah.
How many guys you got going on in there? And I realized he wasn't hearing me. But then I also met some really cogent people. I met a woman who, you know, comes down before she goes to work and then comes down after she's done with
really?
Work. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Go down there, Sam. Yeah. I'm telling you, brother, you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah, I want to go.
Yeah.
They have general assemblies at 7:30 every night on the West Steps downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Bring a recorder, go down. Maybe you find something show-worthy that you can put on the show, man.
Maybe I could, yeah. But, you know, I mean, to me, it's sort of like reminiscent of labor unions, you know,
mm-hmm.
where people try to force people sort of like rise up against the bosses, you know. And I don't know. I don't see that. Let me tell you this. If I'm not happy where I work,
mm-hmm.
I leave.
Right.
Okay. But I can't force my employer to do certain things that are not in line with his business plans.
Right.
You know, I can choose not to work for him. I can choose to work for him.
Right. Or how about if you don't want to work there and you leave and your employer says, hey, remember all that money you have vested in the company? Go fuck yourself. That's mine now. How do you feel then?
Well, I don't know. It never happened to me.
Right. But it's happened to people, Sam. And that's what I'm saying. These are nuanced issues.
Okay. But again, these are like isolated cases.
They're not isolated cases, Sam. It happens more often than you think. Go down there. Talk to these people. They right. have stories, man, and they need smart people like you to come down there and hear them so okay. you can contribute we'll your them. 2 cents to them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I'm not very smart if I don't get their message.
Come on, brother. You are smart. You're smart and handsome, damn it. I said it. I ain't afraid of that.
There you go. Yeah, his confidence in his manliness, let me tell you.
I'm so confident in my manliness, I can look at Sam and say, you handsome devil.
So anyway, enough of the Occupy
yes.
thing. Now, I guess we all heard about Alec Baldwin getting kicked out of a flight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how does he find all these
way
situations?
To go, Alec Baldwin.
Come on, AB. Yeah. Just turn it off.
AB,
always...
I love you and your initials for everything you said.
I tell you something. I fly American too. Uh-huh. Don't do me wrong, American. I know you just went bankrupt, but please hang on to my frequent flyer miles. Please, yeah. please, please. So I'm on American like a few days ago. And,
right.
you know, it's the holidays. It's, you know, it gets harder and harder, you know, as Christmas approaches for flight attendants to deal. So the two rows ahead of me, couple with their young child, I don't know, she may be like a little over two. She looked almost three of me, but she's pushing the buttons. We haven't even left yet. So the flight attendant comes by and she goes, sweetheart, you don't need to push those buttons. You have nothing to do with those buttons. Don't even worry about that. Right? And I'm so kind of chuckling. I'm like, yeah. She's telling. The guy looks at her uh-huh. and says, stay away from my kid.
Really?
No way.
Wow.
It got so tense in there. I wanted to get off the plane. I'm like, please,
why
Mom,
are people like that? So
don't fight. Don't fight.
Unbelievable.
But I mean, do you guys agree? I think you have to talk to and deal with flight attendants in a completely different way than like the guy at the bagel store. The guy at the bagel store ruins you. Hey, like, hey, man, I said butter, not cream cheese. But the flight attendants, we're going to be 36,000 feet in the air, and they might be the only thing between me and like getting hurt if something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, not to mention, was the flight attendant out of hand?
Was she? Yeah.
Oh, she was?
I'm asking. Oh. Like, was she? We don't know. Also, if you're in first class and you're dealing with famous people, put your famous people gloves on and just, I guess, know that they're a little crazy.
Oh, yeah. Crazy, yes.
Yeah.
People, they shouldn't be treated any better than anyone else.
But
that's the thing. Yeah, that's why they kicked him off the plane.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing is, apparently, not only was he playing on his phone when they asked him to turn it off, but he went into the lavatory and slammed the door to the point the cockpit crew heard it and got worried.
What a little kid.
What a baby.
Unbelievable.
I'm telling you.
I don't want to turn off Words with Friends.
And these are like so-called celebrities. I mean,
no, they're actual celebrities. And they want what they want when they want it, man.
Yeah, exactly. And why is it that you rarely hear about normal people going through this shit, but it's always the celebrities.
Well, no one cares about normal people going through this shit.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's
I'm
not
sure
reported
it happens.
As much.
What's the consensus in here? Do we think it's bullshit that you have to turn your stuff off? Can we really flummox something with like a big giant transponder that Boeing made? Can I fuck that up with my iPhone?
You only turn it off though for like the first 10 minutes flying, off. So is that really, is that asking much?
I don't think, I'm with you. I don't think that's a lot to ask.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah. But I also think it's bullshit.
Maybe it is, but do you want to take a chance?
I don't, exactly. I'm with you too. I don't want to take the chance. I think you're all full of shit. I'm turning my phone off anyway because I don't want to tempt fate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't want to take a chance.
Because if we go down because I was on Spotify, man, that's going to suck a lot.
Yeah,
I'll never forget one time I was on the plane and somebody refused to turn their phone off as well. Of course, it wasn't a celebrity, so you didn't hear it in the tabloids. But it also just freaks out everyone else on the plane.
Because
we immediately assume, you know, something's fishy, you know?
Yeah.
You've got something going on. Are you, you know, trying to blow up this plane?
I know, you're in a tight space, man.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got to get along,
everybody,
you know, otherwise.
Chill and breathe and, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I love saying this. Mahatma Gandhi said, we have to love our brothers. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, Mahatma Gandhi said, we have to love our brothers. He didn't say we had to like them.
Just like family, right?
Uh-huh.
We have to love them, but we don't necessarily like
them.
We're
all in it together.
I like that. Yeah, I love that, actually.
And did you see Oscar De La Hoya was apparently on the flight. So he saw what went down. And I got to think the only thing Oscar De La Hoya is thinking is, thank God these cameras in my faces are about Alec Baldwin and not me screwing whores and wearing ladies' underwear.
I love it.
I know these people, man. They do some crazy shit, you know.
They live in a crazy world, man.
Yeah. So, you know what strikes me in the headlines today is Assad of Syria denies responsibility for the crackdown. In other words, you know, he's killed over 4,000 people there now.
Yeah.
And he says no order was made to kill anybody.
Right. Yeah. He's like Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men. Yeah. I'm in charge, but those guys that killed it, that they went rogue.
This is total fucking denial, you know. And not only that, but the thing is that this is what we have to deal with.
Yes.
You know, and these are our enemies.
Yes.
You know, and they live in a completely different planet.
Yeah.
In total denial, and they do whatever the hell they want.
You know, Bashar al-Assad, his days are numbered. I think, you know, this will be, short of Iran, the hardest transition for a country to make. Mm-hmm. But the ball is rolling. I mean, something is going to change in Syria. It's going to take a lot of bloodshed before it does. But the audacity to treat your people that way and then tell any media outlet, I didn't get that.
Yeah, we didn't do anything.
That's fucking. I'll take bullshit despots for 600, Alex. Fuck you, Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah. So, this is dangerous. You know, that's all that concerns me, is that it's really dangerous. It's too close to Israel for comfort.
Yeah.
You know. But I mean, look. You know, you've seen all that Arab Spring and everything, but it's not as perfect as people thought it would be. You know,
it's goes back to my earlier statement in that democracy is messy. Yeah. You know, let me tell you something. The Islamic Brotherhood is you know, going to win elections in Egypt, right. But the first thing they're going to have to do when they really get power is moderate. They're going to have to come to the center.
Well, yeah.
Otherwise, they're not going to stick around very long.
You never know that, though, because they have a lot of Muslims there, you know, that might embrace it.
Well, they are, but, you know, when you get power like that, you got to represent everybody. And if there's one thing we've learned about these kids in Egypt, they are not shy about going right back to Tahrir Square and say, oh, really? Really? You think you're going to fucking swing that bat at me? Mm-hmm. Fuck you, man. Peaceful demonstration in the streets until we get what we want. Yeah. It's remarkable.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's not going to end anytime soon, not with the elections and not with anything
else. No, but it's exciting and it's better than the alternative, because the alternative is Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can't carry that guy out on a stretcher fast enough, man. He's a bad dude.
Oh, he is. Horrible.
He's gone, yeah. So, Stephanie, what else?
Yes. I think
we're alienating you with all the politics.
No, it's just it gets you guys are you've got so much to say, and I'm just enjoying my hangover.
Jump on in, the water's warm.
Well, no, I was just gonna say we should turn the table to Reese. You know, and I don't know a damn thing about you.
I'm a dynamic figure, often seen scaling walls and crushing ice.
Yeah. So you're originally from New York,
yeah,
right?
Born and raised in New York City.
And when did you move out here?
I've been here a long time. I came out, as a much younger man, and I'm one of those New Yorkers that does not slag LA. I love the place.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to guys who come up from New York. It's like, fucking pizza sucks. There's no fucking culture.
Just say you have no accent.
Yeah, I grew up in a house with parents that had foreign accents, so I was bombarded with that nonsense.
Okay.
And but no, I got here and I fell in love with the joint, man.
Yeah.
I told you earlier, the snow is not delivered to your door in LA.
Yeah.
That is okay.
We can live without the snow.
Yeah.
But you can have marijuana delivered to your door, which I'm sure they don't have in New York. There you go.
As soon as you can get pot at CVS, you know, we won.
I know.
We're on the way there, yeah.
Awesome, but horrible. What's your birth sign?
I'm Cancer.
Cancer.
My birthday's in July.
Okay.
Why the face?
No, I always
WTF.
I ask people, I like to know your birth sign. Oh. Scorpio and Cancer are the two I do not, you know, I try to just...
So we're not getting married?
Nope, we're not.
Not anytime soon, huh?
That's too bad. I think we would have made good babies.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Right?
Cancer, New York, I throw right, I can bat left, I do bowl, and I once bowled a 289
at
my friend Scott's birthday party, and I won a bowling ball that I promptly lost once when I moved.
Oh, that's a bummer.
How do you lose a bowling ball?
Do you lose a bowling ball?
You know what has two thumbs and can you lose a bowling ball?
Why would you move a bowling ball with you to another city? That's my question.
Well, it was my ball. They had my name etched in it.
He won it. That's a special prize.
And now someone is out in the world with a ball with my name on it, unless that's their name. Come on, player.
Yeah,
I know you stole that thing.
That's weird. Yeah. Who'd steal a bowling ball anyway?
Well, I lost it. I'm not saying it was stolen,
true.
But that it's on
that's
me.
True.
But I miss my ball.
People will steal anything. Yeah, are you kidding? Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. So what's with your personal life? Are you still with the same woman?
Let's talk. You always ask me. You always go back to my dating life.
Okay.
Listen,
we have to know.
Currently single.
Really?
Currently single.
Yes.
Okay.
And
what does that mean? Does that, are you still seeing someone?
No.
Because we all know, like, talking and hanging out with someone.
Yeah, there are
you
no
were in a relationship for a while, right?
This was a while ago. This
was it
one
really?
Of the first times I was on, I was in a relationship. I have since then been single, kind of, you know, on and off. Listen, I don't have trouble meeting quality people. I have met, you know, really amazing people, but for one reason or another, they don't work out. If I'm lucky, I get to, you know, keep them, you know, as friends and stuff. But no, currently single, not dating, just trying to focus on work, you know.
Okay.
I got some writing projects that are going. I'm directing a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
The dating situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about the documentary.
Oh, thank you for asking. My partner, Allison Litton, and I are working on a documentary. It's called Last Men Out. It's about the helicopter pilots of the F Troop 4th Cavalry in Vietnam.
Holy cow. What made you decide to do this? I love documentaries, first of all.
It's exciting. My friend Allison's dad, Joe Litton, was a lieutenant in the United States Army, two tours in Vietnam. His last one was as a helicopter pilot in this particular unit. But this happened at the end of the war. Allison came to me and started talking about these notes she was compiling about her dad and their unit. And she was thinking maybe a book. And the more she and I talked about it, I told her, I said, you've got a documentary here. And I think she was thinking that too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then God bless her, she asked me to participate with her, you know. Well, I've directed a couple of short films, and I, you know, I'm an aspiring filmmaker, so she invited me into really what is her project. I always tell everybody, I'm like, we're all just working for Allison here. But her dad and his mates served in Vietnam from the end of 1971 to just after 1973 in this particular unit. This was at the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have this statistic right, I remember. They went from, at any given point during the height of the war, from 25 helicopter units to, at when these guys were flying, to two.
Holy
cow.
Wow.
And they were one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are amazing. We did all our interview footage at one of their reunions in San Diego. And to a man, without any hyperbolic language, without any sort of, you know, aggrandizing of anything, they talked about just having done their jobs, these difficult and remarkable jobs that they did in a war that was incredibly unpopular,
right.
And so brave and honorable and amazing, and we're really looking forward to continuing to labor on it to get it finished. Like a lot of documentaries, we keep running out of money.
Mm-hmm.
But I got.
Did it take a big budget for this though? Documentaries are usually a little more easy on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like trying to finance a studio picture or anything. You know, most documentaries are a labor of love, and you know, Allison came up with most of the money that we started with. We also got a lot of contributions from friends and family. We put the project on Indiegogo.com.
That site's fabulous.
Yeah, it was really, really helpful, especially in, you know, ramping up to our initial shooting days of getting all the interview footage, you know, getting down to San Diego and shooting, hiring a crew and shooting these guys. What we're doing right now is we're going to be looking for grant money,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to get some meetings with some people that I think will support this project, because we need to shoot just a few more things. We need to keep paying our editor, and then we can get something cut together and get into some festivals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Theirs was an amazing story that I'm really proud to be a part of to tell.
Yeah. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of organizations that we want to sponsor part of
it. Oh, there are many,
right?
many grants. It's just the hoops you got to jump through to find the money.
Right.
And it's not going to take much, but I think, you know, I'll tell you something very interesting. You know, the commanding officer, a man named Colonel John Spencer, he's amazing. He had his cavalry hat on during the they all bring their cavalry hats. And at one point he turned, he said, Reese, I've got to go use the men's room. Would you hang on to my hat? I said, yeah, sure. And I took a picture of myself in his hat. You know what I call it? I'm standing there with his hat on. Hollywood pussy in a hero's hat.
I love it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But he, you know, they all talked about this one operation in, I believe it was April of 1972, where one of their birds went down, two of the three crew were killed, and they all flew into this hot zone. And one man ended up, Captain Ron Radcliffe, ended up taking 300 rounds of fire, pulled out of the zone, kicked his crew out of his bird, and then went back by himself to rescue the downed pilot. Colonel Spencer submitted him for the Congressional Medal of Honor afterwards, and it was turned down.
Really?
Captain Radcliffe has been awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross, but the Congressional Medal of Honor was turned down, and then he found out, because Nixon and Kissinger had instituted an order to stop giving out the Congressional Medal of Honor to living recipients because at the time the war was raging and they had an election to get ready for, and they did not want living recipients, you know, getting this award when the war had become so unpopular.
Right, exactly.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, we're going to try to highlight that part of our story as well as all the stories of the guys.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think the brunt of this went to the soldiers, to the troops that had to come back home to an unhappy population, you know, about the war. And here these people are like risking their lives, dying there, and nobody really cared. After
That's
a while
horrible.
Anymore.
Do you know what each of them really said in their own way? How glad they are that the guys coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are welcomed as warmly as they are. Mm-hmm. They love seeing these guys and women coming home and being treated with such respect in airports and public mm-hmm. places. And it all comes from the same thing. Because when they came home, mm-hmm. they got spat on.
Right.
I mean, literally spat
And hopefully
on.
We learned something, yeah.
It seems like we have, yeah. but it's not too late to honor these men, because right. when they came home, when they were young and having done this very difficult job, they weren't treated very well, but they're still alive, they're still here, and we can take the opportunity to really thank them and welcome them home for doing this very difficult job.
Yeah, well, I'm sure this film is going to help.
I hope so. You know, that's our goal, man.
Show their story a little bit.
Yeah, that's our goal.
So it's still finishing up.
Yes.
And eventually it will be in festivals then. That's where we'll see it.
Yeah, that's the route you usually go with festivals. And, you know, our hope is to get it out to as many, you know, people and through as many outlets as we can. But and also, I love film festivals. I love going to film festivals because, you know, filmmakers and other creative people are there. And what a great environment to share a message like that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's our plan. I promise to keep the show apprised of what happens with
Yes,
that.
Sounds
please
good.
Do.
Yeah. I'm excited
like
to see
to
this.
See that,
Thank
for sure.
You. Thank
yeah.
you very much.
So you also like to write, right?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. What do you like to write?
You know, my writing partner and I are currently shopping a TV project we wrote and you know, I'm always writing stuff. I started writing sketch comedy.
Nice.
Yeah, with a party we wrote and performed in this sketch comedy show that we produced together. And
you performed too?
Yeah, that was always fun. You know, the beauty of writing stuff is, like, I wrote a short film. The first thing I directed, it's called Corn Dog of Tolerance. It's about
catchy title.
Thank you very much. You can find it on Vimeo. Go Google Corn Dog of Tolerance. And it's a little ode to accepting people for who and what they are. And it stemmed from an experience I had where I was out in public at this thing, and this kid just started chatting with me, and it revealed this bias he has against gay people. Mm. He was just a kid. I just let him talk, and then I said, all right. But as a writer, you can take these experiences and turn them into the thing you wish they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love doing.
Yeah.
I love sort of painting a picture that I wish existed, or one that I fantasize about.
Right.
That I think is the power of writing. You know, I'm never gonna be Ray Bradbury or William Shakespeare or anything, but I can tell my clever little stories.
Yeah.
It's a great outlet. It's a great way of sort of showing what's going on between my ears.
Yeah.
And hopefully people, you know, not throw tomatoes at me.
You should write like columns and stuff for newspapers, blogs, things like that.
You know,
because you're opinionated, you write well, you express yourself well. Why not?
Thank you. I've got a website, or at least I have my name as a domain. I'm such a slacker.
You are horrible. Come on, pitch yourself, damn it.
I'm such a slacker. Sorry. I mean, my friend Taz helped me lock down my domain name, and right now all it does is direct people to my Twitter feed because I've yet to build this site.
I design websites.
Do you?
I do.
Done. I'm going to get your help. No, but one of the things that my sister keeps encouraging, she's like, get your website up, put your short films on there, and start a blog.
Yeah.
You know, not like my two cents is just about as worth as anybody else's, and I'm certainly not a journalist. I really appreciate good journalism, you know, guys like Jake Tapper and Matt Taibbi and Fariz.
It's good you know your limits.
I'm well aware of my limits. So whatever pablum I put out there, it's safe on a blog and where anyone can tell me what a dick I am, which is fine. But yeah, you know, I got two cents. I know how to write. That's,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, what the hell, you know, get out there. And you don't really have to be a journalist to be a columnist, you know. I mean, it's not about reporting so much as about your opinion and
yeah.
And analysis and things like that.
You are quite opinionated.
Yeah, I've got those in spades, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hey, if Chelsea Clinton can get a job at NBC News, why can't I?
Exactly.
Amen
well,
to
you
that.
Can, you know. You can. Forget about the Occupy movement and go and stand out there.
Hey, Chelsea, nice to see you around the office. What are we going to report on today? God, she got such grief, that poor girl.
Really?
I know.
If my dad was president, my mom was Secretary of State, I'd take the gig if they gave it to me.
Take
of
whatever
course.
They give you. What the hell?
Come
you know?
On, player.
Yeah.
People are just haters.
Haters. The haters gonna hate.
Haters.
The haters gonna hate. Yeah. Are you guys checking out texts with Bennett on the web? Mm-mm. This is
no.
the most hilarious blog I've seen in a long time. This guy purports that his nephew Bennett is a teenager. He's white. He works at an Arco station, but he thinks he's all gangsta. And he gets these texts from him. Like one of the sample texts is like, "Yo, what's it take to join the Illuminati?"
You're kidding me.
Check out Texts with Bennett. Go Google it.
I've never even heard of this.
It's, in the last 5 days, I've had four different people talk to me about it, but I've only just heard about it too, but I have snotted myself laughing so hard. I really hope to God this kid is real, because if he is, he is like the most surreptitious genius ever.
Right.
I don't think he gets like how brilliant he is. This is one text about how, you know, so like the guy writes back to his cousin, "Why are you in jail?" "Oh, because I filled a car up with water." "Why did you fill a car up with water?" "Oh, it's the hoe that lives in the duplex next to me. She wouldn't shut up, so I filled her car up with water." "Why?" "Because I'm straight up gangsta, yo."
Oh my God, it's just outrageous, ridiculous stuff.
So much fun.
I love
it
that.
Is, yeah. That. Well, we're out of time, folks. Reese, finally, who do you think is going to win the presidency?
I think the president's going to be tough to beat. He's got $1 billion to spend, and he's got a muddled field on the other side. Look for four more years, whether you want him or not. But I got to tell you, this GOP race, man, it's better than reality TV.
It is. It's okay. Ridiculous.
Well, we got the answer here. Reese, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
yet
you guys.
Once again, we always love to have you.
I love being here. Thanks.
Okay, and Steph, thank you, and we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You've been listening to Sam and Steph in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only right here on LA Talk Radio. If you have a question for one of our hosts, or if you would like to inquire about starting your very own talk radio show, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Steph in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.